They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Hey, if you're listening to this, I will assume you're at least interested in money, understanding the economy, and finances as well. And some of us now want to get the next generation interested as well. So check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. Tune into Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Get 1 month free and an extra $10 when you sign up for a Greenlight account at greenlight.com/million. On the program today, China and what's going on there, crypto and what is going on there, and the supply chain and what is still going on there. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Monday today. This one's the 14th of November. Good as always to have you along, everybody. So I'll tell you what, you could look at almost any slice of the Sino-American relationship right now, be it diplomatic, geopolitical, economic, technological, and things have been frosty. It's not like that's new, right? We have talked about the Trump administration's tariffs and trade war, but it is why President Biden's first face-to-face meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping today at the G20 was such a big deal. And yes, sure, fine, okay, the geopolitical strategic hot-button issues got pride of place today, but we are talking about the two biggest economies on the planet, oh, by the way. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman gets us going.
Xi Jinping has just consolidated power and is beginning to address some of China's persistent economic problems. A zero-COVID policy that's repeatedly shut down major cities and industries, an overheated property market that's rapidly deflating. All that has led to a sharp slowdown in China's economic growth, which until recently has been the wonder of the world.
2022 has been effectively 0 to 2% GDP growth.
Daniel Rosen at economic research firm The Rhodium Group says growth over the next 2 years is likely to be under 3%.
Not bad for a nearly $20 trillion economy, but not anywhere close to the promises that Beijing has made.
Chinese consumers are frustrated and pessimistic about the future, says University of Chicago political scientist Dali Yang.
The way that I would describe it is exhaustion. After 3 years of zero COVID, because of the uncertainties, how those policies have hurt businesses.
For the rest of the world, a persistently sluggish Chinese economy means less opportunity for trade. That's both for developing economies that provide China with raw materials and advanced economies like Germany and the U.S. that provide goods like cars and machinery. U.S.-China trade is already severely hampered by President Trump's punitive tariffs and President Biden's new restrictions on high-tech exports, says Chad Bown at the Peterson Institute for International Economics.
China is still buying some stuff from the United States, a fair amount of agricultural products, but it has never resumed its purchases of manufactured goods. And a lot of the energy products, coal and LNG and oil, petroleum products, those have basically disappeared.
Xi and Biden's meeting today might be a harbinger of more cooperation between the two superpowers on common ground issues like climate change. And it may signal that this still massive trade relationship isn't about to break down even more. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, nope. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. The macroeconomic through line this week is retail. Walmart and Target, Kohl's and Home Depot are going to report earnings for their last quarter. Then Wednesday morning, there will be new data on October retail sales overall. And while the holiday shopping season die is already largely cast, retailers are planning a whole lot of discounts and promotions they are hoping will keep us spending despite all that inflation. And if they can clear out some excess inventory while they're at it, well, they'd be okay with that too. Marketplace's Savannah Marr has more on retailers' holiday wish lists.
It's been a wonky couple of years for holiday shopping. In 2020, the pandemic was the major disruption. In 2021, it was snarled supply chains. This year, it's inflation. So at the very top of that wish list,
that consumers are going to get out there and actually spend.
Sonia Lipinski at Alex Partners says the sector is marketing to a different type of holiday shopper than last year, one who's pickier and more price conscious.
Retailers are hoping that they can keep as much of the consumer wallet share as possible, given that there's a pressure of inflation and looming potential economic worry.
Maybe you've already noticed some even earlier promotions and discounts. They could help retailers check another item off their list.
To get rid of as much extra inventory in our supply chain as we can.
Terry Asper, a professor of logistics at The Ohio State University, says big box stores are still buried in toaster ovens and loungewear thanks to a sharp turn in the way consumers were spending their money earlier this year.
I also think that from a wish list perspective, we would be remiss if we did not highlight the labor conversation.
Challenges staffing up for the holidays in a still tight labor market are part of why retailers are hoping we'll ditch some old pre-pandemic shopping habits, says economist Shannon Seery with Wells Fargo.
One thing I guess retailers might not be looking forward to that would be returning is the Black Friday sales environment.
Hence, holiday sales and promotions starting in October that are expected to continue through January.
Retailers are almost wishing for a more steady pace of holiday spending rather than like a mad dash to those holiday sales.
Another thing they're wishing for, some degree of normalcy and predictability, so they might not have to do so much guessing about what consumers want and how much they're willing or able to spend. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
Whether you're into crypto or you're not into crypto, you've probably at least heard of a company called FTX. It is now in bankruptcy. Its CEO has stepped down, but there is a non-zero chance that this moment in crypto might have some ripple effects. So we decided it was time for a little primer on FTX, and it's once high-flying, but now definitely not, CEO Sam Bankman-Fried. So we've gotten Liz Hoffman on the phone. She's a business and finance editor at Semaphore. Liz, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
I want to start really nuts and bolts here because this is a tremendously complicated story. What exactly is a cryptocurrency exchange?
You can think of it like the New York Stock Exchange, but instead of trading shares of Apple or Microsoft, you trade cryptocurrencies, these sort of funny money coins that are have become all the rage in the last 5 or 10 years.
They have indeed. Okay, so what is, or I guess what was, right, because we have to ask in the past tense now, what was FTX's place in that exchange ecosystem?
It was one of the largest. I mean, plainly put, it was a major player. It's where a lot of people traded their crypto, bought and sold it, and importantly, kept it.
And it has seemingly vaporized in something less than like 10 days. What happened?
At a very fundamental level, they were supposed to hold on to people's money and give it back to them when they asked for it, and they failed to do that. So you can think of it as just a classic run on the bank, like set aside all of the weirdness around cryptocurrencies, and it was just a run on the bank. They didn't have the money when people wanted it back, and they filed for bankruptcy on Friday.
And the company and its very high-profile founder, Sam Bankman-Fried, is under investigation.
Yes. Regulators and prosecutors want to know exactly what happened here in the same way that you'll remember when Lehman Brothers mm-hmm. went under and AIG nearly failed. I mean, it was a real reckoning for the financial system and raised some very fair questions about who was asleep at the switch.
So do you think this is the Lehman moment? Do you think this is the reckoning for crypto now?
I do, Kai. You know, for all we've been talking about crypto for the last 5 or 10 years, it's still really in its early days. Maybe it's sort of like rebellious adolescence. And, you know, when in every sort of market, every new market that pops up goes through this period. And there's a lot of knucklehead stuff that gets sort of washed out. And there's someone who comes along and professionalizes it. And that was supposed to be Sam Bankman-Fried, who I should note is an investor in Semaphore.
Yep.
And without him, there is not an obvious contender for that role. And then the other thing is that all financial systems are just confidence games, right? The reason that banks don't fail is because people think their money will be there when they go get it. And this is a real confidence reset for crypto.
There will be many people out there screaming, where were the regulators? Why isn't somebody keeping an eye on crypto? Because for all the knucklehead stuff that's happening, there are millions and billions of dollars that have just disappeared.
Yes. This was a little bit of a regulatory jump ball because it's not quite a security like the Securities and Exchange Commission. It's not a bank like the Fed overseas. The other thing is there's a real knowledge gap between the people in charge in Washington and the like move fast and break things technology people. And this just like that gap was especially wide in crypto. And they did not get there in time.
Do you think this hastens the push for some kind of substantive regulation?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's got it.
Absolutely. You don't really have to worry too much about the weirdness of cryptocurrencies. It was an exchange, and the New York Stock Exchange has to keep a certain amount of capital, and they're not allowed to take the other side of trades. I mean, just very basic nuts and bolts Wall Street regulation would have gone very far here.
All right. So look, if I'm just a person in this economy trying to grind it out and I'm, you know, reading the headlines and I see this story, why does this event matter to me?
I should say at a high level, I'm not totally sure that it does. If you've just been living your life at your bank, you're probably fine. You know, crypto, by definition, had this like real disdain for the establishment. And so they largely lived outside of it. FTX is not all that plugged in to most of the traditional financial system. That said, these things can have really weird knock-on effects, and it takes a long time to figure out where they are. And then, look, if you found some value in cryptocurrency, I think there is some interesting stuff there, ways to save people money, to reduce costs, for example, transferring money. And, you know, if you've tried to get a mortgage, I mean, God, it's a mess. This really sets that back probably by a decade.
Last thing, and then I'll let you go. There is no bailout a-coming, right? There's no Federal Reserve that backstops banks, right, in the land of crypto.
Absolutely not. And, you know, that's something that people who are customers of FTX and a lot of these crypto companies that have gone bankrupt are realizing that they are the creditors, right? They are, no one is coming to their rescue here. Like you said, if your bank deposits are insured by the FDIC, your brokerage account is insured by a similar mutualized backstop there. There is nothing here. And I think FTX's customers are unlikely to recover much, if anything.
Liz Hoffman, she's a business and finance editor at Semaphore. Liz, thanks a lot. I appreciate your expertise.
Thanks, Kai. Anytime.
Coming up.
So we're seeing a lot of new customers.
That's got to be good, right? First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's off 211. Today, that is 0.6%, 33,536. NASDAQ subtracted 127 points, about 1.1%, 11,196. S&P 500 down 35 points, about 0.9%, 39.57. About 10,000 employees. That's how many Amazon is going to be laying off from corporate and technology positions starting this week. About 3% of the company's staff shares in Amazon, down a little over 2.25% today. There are too many Magic the Gathering cards being issued by toymaker Hasbro. That criticism from analysts at Bank of America, who argue that while issuing all those new cards has propped up the franchise's revenues, It is damaging its long-term viability. Shares in Hasbro fell just shy of 10%. Also, a corollary, there are markets in everything. You're listening to Marketplace.
My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.
Traditional revenue sources for public media and media at large are declining this year, and we at Marketplace are not immune to those trends. We're currently tracking behind target for this budget year. We're tightening up our expenses, yes, but the need for trusted, grounded, fact-based reporting is as pressing as ever, and we simply cannot cut back on our mission. So we're turning to the listeners like you. Please step up now and invest in Marketplace. If you haven't given yet, now's the time. Go to marketplace.org/donate. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Food, as we all know, has gotten more expensive over the past year. 11% more expensive. That's according to the CPI numbers that we got last week. Not more expensive, though, most cuts of beef, which are lower than they were a year ago. All of that by way of background to today's earnings report from Tyson Foods. The meatpacker said that while, yeah, beef and pork prices did fall on average, its prices were up overall. Marketplace's Justin Ho explains the apparent discrepancy there is all thanks to our old friends, supply and demand.
Let's start with beef. On average, Tyson Foods is charging 8% less for it than it did a year ago. It says that's because people have shifted to buying cheaper cuts of beef. Jason Lusk runs the Agricultural Economics Department at Purdue University.
Inflationary pressures have been hitting consumers, and so they're looking for ways to economize.
At the same time, Lusk says beef supplies have been rising. That's because producers have been bringing more cattle to market this fall.
It's an anticipation that they don't have enough forage to feed those animals over the winter. And given the fact that other grain prices, corn, soybeans are high, it'd be very costly to keep those animals around.
The supply of pork has been rising, too. Glenn Tonzer at Kansas State University says foreign demand for American pork is down, in large part because the dollar is so strong.
And that makes it harder for U.S. companies to export, which in turn leads to more pork being here in our domestic market.
Tonzer's been researching how consumers react when prices of various pork products rise. Take the category that includes pork chops.
Price sensitivity, consumers responding to how it's marked down or not marked down, is growing in the pork loin category as we have higher inflation.
That kind of price sensitivity has consumers reaching for an alternative.
Chicken is generally cheaper than beef and pork for the consumer.
That's Dan Sumner, an ag economist at UC Davis. Tyson Foods reported it's charging more for chicken. Sumner says chicken producers are likely to ramp up production next year.
It's a little easier to fine-tune that in 6 months as opposed to if you want another steer, I'm sorry, you made that decision 3 years ago.
The USDA expects chicken production to grow by 2% next year. It expects beef production to fall. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
In today's installment of our long-running series, The Supply Chain is Still Messed Up, we bring you the power grid, transformers specifically. Everything from those cylindrical things up on the utility pole outside your house to those ginormous devices that connect power substations to the actual grid. The shortage of transformers is so bad that a couple of weeks ago, the trade group for power companies sent a letter to the Department of Energy asking them to incentivize more domestic production. And oh, by the way, it's not just big companies that are worried about it, as Marketplace's Andy Euler reports.
There is a lot of movement happening in this brand new 155,000 square foot industrial space in Southeast Austin. Forklifts and pallet jacks moving stuff all over the place.
So this is kind of our machines assembly area.
David Rossino is co-founder and CEO of the building's occupant, American Canning.
So we build small scale fillers and can handling equipment, you know, really for the craft beverage space in this area.
He says business is booming, but this facility is way behind schedule. Electricians and plumbers are doing work right now that Rossino had hoped they'd have finished over the summer.
So instead of growing our business, we're triaging issues that we didn't even know could exist, much less we're going to persist for, you know, 4 to 6 months.
And one of the issues that set this project back the most was a months-long wait for a transformer.
You know, there is evidently only one supplier that's authorized that makes these on the planet. The problem with that is when that one supplier gets backed up, it impacts all of their customers that are in construction projects.
Okay, he's exaggerating a little bit. There are actually three manufacturers, but it still took American Canning months to get the transformer it needed because lots of businesses need lots of different transformers.
It's a phenomenally simple, effective, reliable device that transforms either from a low voltage to a high voltage or a high voltage to a low voltage.
David Tuttle's a research fellow at the University of Texas at Austin's Energy Institute.
To transport the electricity long distances, what was discovered that if you can step up the voltage, the more you step it up, the lower the losses.
So a transformer is the interface between your home and the local power grid, the place where you work and the power provider there, pretty much anywhere there's electric service, which means the shortage is especially painful for utility companies. Jeff Bradford is director of field operations at American Canning's utility, Austin Energy.
We are communicating that with our customers on the front end as far as the lead times with these transformers go, but they're upwards of some of the larger customer, you know, larger transformers are upwards of 52 to, you know, 64 weeks out. So they've got, you know, like a year lead time.
And that's true nationwide. Joy Ditto is president and CEO of the American Public Power Association. They're a trade group that represents community-owned utilities like Austin Energy. She says her members sent a letter to the Department of Energy to let policymakers know just how dour the situation is.
This is fundamental to doing business in the electric sector, and we have not, at least in recent memory, seen anything like this in the distribution transformer side.
And the transformer shortage isn't the only issue that delayed American Canning's new facility. CEO David Rossino pushes some buttons on what looks like an iPad to start up a machine called a CP4. Stands for counter pressure forehead. It fills and seams cans. It fills 24 cans in a minute with whatever liquid you want them to hold. Earlier this year, American Canning couldn't source the LED screens for a unit like this, so the company had to re-engineer it with older available screens, which delayed new business opportunities.
So sometimes people don't realize one little component out of this whole 155,000 square feet, you got one little piece of plastic and metal that holds up our ability to use the space. There's a lot of money sitting here that a small growing business like us can't really afford to eat for, you know, the better part of a quarter to a third of a year.
Rossino says because everything on the supply chain side is so touch and go, companies like his have to be prepared to reprioritize and change plans on a dime. In Austin, I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
We started today with a big picture look at the Washington-Beijing economic relationship. Trade, of course, very high on that list. One industry that's on the very pointy end of the still in effect U.S. tariffs on Chinese imports, as well as basically every other supply chain issue you might be able to imagine, is customs brokers. So we gave our customs broker, Gretchen Blau, a call. She's at Logistics Plus in Erie, Pennsylvania.
Things have calmed down a bit as far as the supply chain issues. Pricing is coming down slightly. It's not going to go back to where it was pre-pandemic, but, you know, it's nice to see things stabilize a bit. The importers all understand the extra tariffs that are on everything, so we're not explaining that constantly. Everyone's hoping it goes away. We were kind of hoping that they would go away before the elections. They didn't. You know, we've kind of got our hopes up one too many times. We're not looking for any radical changes. We've seen old customers come back that weren't importing during the pandemic, during the supply chain issues. We have our steady customers still importing and exporting as well. And we have a lot of new customers that, because of the supply chain issues, are looking to us to help them with the trucks overseas, the air and ocean transport, and the trucks when it gets here to the U.S. So we're seeing a lot of new customers. We've expanded our team and whatnot, so I have a lot of help there. But as our team expands, we also get a wider customer base. We have to learn about more commodities and, you know, how to classify them and get all that information. I think probably the most interesting one is basically a racking system to automatically pick groceries for, you know, like Instacart or whatnot. Unfortunately, it was so cool that my team ask, hey, can we do this? Because this is super cool. So I don't even do those entries because they were so excited and they're just as nerdy as I am. I think we're finally in a rhythm as to, you know, how things are supposed to go and operate on a daily basis. We still have capacity issues with trucks both overseas and here, but I'm feeling good about it. I mean, it's open to world events and how that affects us. Things have changed rapidly in the past few years, and it's pretty unpredictable, but at the moment, I'm feeling good.
Gretchen Blau, Logistics Plus, Erie, PA. Final note on the way out today about which, I mean, okay, I guess. Anyway, saw this on CNN today that somebody has paid $200,000 for Steve Jobs's old Birkenstocks. Here's the quote from the auction catalog. The cork and jute footbed retains the imprint of Steve Jobs's feet, which had been shaped after years of use. All right, off we go, but here's your moment of economic context. It might not get much press outside of California, but 48,000 teaching assistants and postdocs and researchers at the University of California system went out on strike today. They are seeking, among other things, a minimum annual salary of $54,000 and increased childcare benefits as well. Our daily production team includes Anais Amin, Andy Corbin, Richard Cunningham, Nicholas Giong, Maria Hollenhorst, Sarah Leeson, Sean McHenry, and Daisy Palacios. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
Hey, everyone. It's Rima Khreis, host of This is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.